Evidence and Answers begins right now. This is Evidence and Answers radio broadcast with our host, Pat Zukeran. Pat is an author, teacher, and international speaker in the area of Christian apologetics, the defense of the Christian faith. Did Jesus really see himself as a fulfillment of prophecy? Or did the early Christians read too much into the Old Testament? In this episode, we'll look at how Jesus explicitly identified himself with messianic prophecies. He made predictions that were fulfilled in his lifetime and revealed God's plan through typology and dual fulfillment. We'll also show you why prophecy remains one of the strongest pieces of evidence for the Bible's divine inspiration and for Jesus' claim to be the Son of God. If you've missed any part of this broadcast, log on at evidenceandanswers.org, and there you will find this discussion entitled Jesus' Use of Prophecy, Show Number 7, from Paratus, a podcast from Veritas International University. And you'll find hundreds more podcasts that you may download or listen online. Now let's get right into the conclusion of this fascinating topic.
Jesus claimed to be the divine Son of God, and he confirmed his claim through his miraculous, sinless life and resurrection from the dead. And so Jesus, being the divine Son of God, affirms the divine inspiration of the Bible. So what Jesus taught is true. He affirms the Bible to be true. Therefore, we can rely on the Bible because of the testimony of Christ, the divine Son of God. But also, we can establish that the Bible is historically reliable from external sources, such as archaeology. That's an arena that I'm studying right now. There's no book that has so much archaeological confirmation as the Bible. Dr. Randall Price, a good archaeologist, in his book, I believe it's called The Stones Cry Out, says there's over 100,000 archaeological discoveries that confirm people, places, and events written of in the Bible. Many accounts that were thought to be fiction, you know, King David, King Solomon, Hezekiah's battle with Sennacherib in, was it 1 Kings 19? Sodom and Gomorrah, Jericho, you know, the city of Ai, we can just go on and on and on, have been discovered and confirmed by archaeology. No book that has that kind of testimony to uphold its historical integrity. We have non-Christian historical records. You know, when it comes to Old Testament, you've got records from Syria, Babylon, and others that affirm the Old Testament events. When it comes to the Gospels, you've got Roman records, you've got Jewish records. And the interesting thing, especially in the Gospels, is that many of these non-Christian sources are, we could call them anti-Christian or hostile witnesses. And we know in court, when your opponent affirms many of your facts, that's some of the most powerful witness in court. And that's the same in history. And we've got thousands of manuscripts that confirm our New Testament has been accurately preserved. We've got records like the Dead Sea Scrolls that show our Old Testament has been accurately preserved. And then we've got the testimony of history from fulfilled prophecy. You know, prophecies are made in the New and Old Testament, and we can see their fulfillment in history. You know, Roman records, Babylonian records, Persian records, even Greek records showing how these prophecies have come to pass. And so we have a lot of evidence that confirm the historical accuracy of the Bible. And the principle is this: once you establish the Bible as a reliable witness, then one would be foolish not to utilize its testimony. So in court, if you have an eyewitness, let's say to a crime, and you cross-examine him, and he turns out to be very reliable. I mean, you know, you say, what time did the crime occur? And he says, you know, 12 o'clock noon. Where did it occur? Right here at this bank. What did you see? Well, the alarm went exactly off at 12:01. There were 16 people in the courtroom. You know, this guy was standing here. I mean, and he's accurate. and reliable. Well, a lawyer would be foolish not to use him as a key witness. And so once you establish the reliability of the Bible, it'd be foolish not to use it as evidence for the life of Christ.
Yeah, so good. And I love those summaries, you know, the biblical reliability, the historical reliability, and then what I would call, you know, the fallout, the reality of what happened. And obviously one of the fallout that we could point to would be the resurrection, that these guys, their lives were changed, and they were willing to die for what they knew was the truth of the matter, that Jesus rose from the dead. So it's really good, you know, considering the evidence and using the Bible, as you said, in a court of law, it'd be crazy. I'm reminded of one of my mentors, John Warwick Montgomery. He gave a, before he died, he gave a lecture at Lanier Theological Library, which is there in the Houston area. And he talked about this very thing, you know, how the Bible and in the case of the resurrection and other things, really do stand up to legal scrutiny and could be used in a court of law. So I appreciate that. I know that was kind of one of those difficult questions, but it's also important for us to put on the hat of modern day apologists, where we're looking at things either online or what we hear, you know, discussed in the grocery store, and say, okay, how would we respond to that? And so people who say that we're using the Bible to prove the Bible, you could almost say, well, we're using history and the historical fallout just as easily as we are using the Bible. And then, of course, using biblical reliability to show that the Bible is reliable, then you could use a reliable source. So that's awesome, Pat. Thanks so much. So I kind of another advocate position here. You know, other people will claim that the New Testament is cherry-picked from the Old Testament. And we usually hear this from Jewish quarters and or Muslim quarters. They'll say, oh, you Christians, you guys just picked a few random verses from the Old Testament and you tried to apply them to Jesus. And then they'll go back and say, this is not how you're to understand these texts at all. And they'll reassign what those texts mean. So how do we answer those people, that the prophecies that are recorded in the Old Testament actually did point to the Messiah and were fulfilled, and were not just cherry-picked by early Christians to try to prove a point?
Yeah, that's a great question there. You know, first of all, there are too many verses to be cherry-picked or accidental. I mean, we're not just talking about two or three verses here. I mean, there are dozens of passages that connect to Jesus Christ. And a lot of the prophecies he had no control over, you know, where he would be born, his lineage, betrayed for exactly 30 pieces of silver, and passages regarding his crucifixion, like Psalm 22, you know, pierced my hands and feet, Isaiah 53, he's crucified with criminals, but buried in a rich man's tomb. So we're not just talking a few verses here. We're talking many verses here. But secondly, also, the New Testament writers didn't just grab isolated verses out of their context. They were interpreting the passages according to their context. So if you look at the context, they were building on major messianic themes here that run throughout the Old Testament. Themes like the suffering servant, the Davidic king who would come from the line of David and establish a new covenant. That runs throughout the Old Testament. And so they were building on the proper interpretation of the text. And we can see from Jewish commentaries back then, you know, one of the most important is the Dead Sea Scrolls, you know, and how they interpreted these passages. And they interpreted it as messianic. They were waiting for a Messiah to appear, a person here. And so Jesus and the apostles were consistent not only with the context of the Bible, but also the Jewish understanding of this context here. They weren't just making things up out of the air as they cherry-picked a verse here and a cherry-picked a verse there. They were using what the Jews knew were messianic passages and building on these, showing how they point to the Messiah. For example, Isaiah 53 speaks here of the suffering servant. And Isaiah, from chapter 40 on, I believe, he after speaking of the judgment upon the nation of Israel, then presents to them the future hope. And though they have sinned, God will restore this nation. And one of the key figures there is the suffering servant. And he is expounded upon by Isaiah in chapter 53. And you look at the description of this suffering servant. He's definitely pointing to someone in the future. And this messianic figure fits the picture of Jesus. It says, they made a grave with the wicked and with a rich man in his death. Although he had done no violence and there was no deceit in his mouth. I mean, that's not referring to the nation of Israel here. That's referring to someone, a messianic figure here that the Old Testament guys that wrote commentaries on the Old Testament and theologians understood this was a messianic figure here. You know, and it talks about him saying that he is cut off from the land of the living, yet he shall see his descendants. So he's talking about death and resurrection. And so we're not cherry picking. It's accurately describing a messianic figure here. And it's clearly pointing Jesus best fits that figure here in Isaiah 53. Psalm 22, written by David, expressing his own deep suffering and hope of God's future deliverance. And under inspiration of the Spirit, things that he suffered, that he said points to a future Messiah. And the things that happened to David, he describes, they pierced my hands and feet. Well, he's speaking figuratively there, but that literally is fulfilled in Christ. Mm. You know, so a lot of the passages here are indeed pointing to a future coming Messiah and describes Jesus quite accurately here. And Peter, quoting in Acts chapter 2, verse 25, he's quoting Psalm 16, and he's pointing people to Christ. And he says, David says, for you will not abandon my soul to Sheol or let your Holy One see corruption. And then Peter points out, he says, hey, everyone, brothers, I may say to you with confidence about the patriarch David, that he both died and was buried, and his tomb is with us to this day. So Peter's pointing out, he says, David says, you will not let your Holy One see corruption. And Peter says, hey, folks, that's not talking about David, because David died and his body did see corruption. He's buried. David is pointing to someone else, and he's pointing right to Christ, whose body did not see corruption because he resurrected from the dead. And so many of these passages here, I mean, there's just too many to be cherry-picked. They're messianic in their context, and these guys are accurately quoting scripture that point to Christ.
Right. You know, in conversations I have, I came up with an acronym that kind of summarizes those four points, and it'd be good for our listeners to learn this acronym, and it's simply DASH, D-A-S-H. And I say, it's the detailed descriptions, and something that you alluded to earlier, Pat. It's not just a Republican. This is a Republican who lived in this state, and he was born in this city, and he was from this high school. I mean, there's detailed description that is very specific. So that D is detailed description. Then the A is the accurate connection to Jesus. So it's not that it's just detailed, but then it's connected to Jesus accurately. As you pointed out, Pat, Jesus couldn't, didn't know, I mean, you know, from a human standpoint, that he was going to be born in Bethlehem. He didn't realize, you know, that who his parents are, you know, looking at from a secular standpoint. Now, obviously, God knew, because God is, you know, using this prophecy. But so you have detailed description, you have accurate connection to Jesus. And then S is scriptural integrity, that the scripture is being interpreted, not just cherry-picked, but it's looking at the context. So you turn to Isaiah, and Isaiah is clearly talking about the Messiah. You look at portions in Micah, who's clearly talking about the Messiah. So it's not that Christians are cherry-picking. They're looking at the integrity of the scriptural witness itself. So you have detailed description. You have accurate connection to Jesus. You have scriptural integrity. And then you already pointed this out as well, Pat, and that's the historical provenance. We do know for a fact that people in the first century were looking for the Messiah. We have it not just in the Christian community, but we have it with the Essenes. We have it with a lot of different Jewish groups. And so this wasn't just some Christian, you know, group of Jews who said, "Huh, we should start looking for the Messiah." But there was an expectation. So there was a historical provenance that this fits. So the DASH is a great acronym for our listeners to use, particularly if you're talking with Jewish or Muslim person who just says, "Yeah, you Christians are cherry picking." And just remember, no, DASH, the detailed description is so unique. And then the A, that it's accurately connected to Jesus. The S, the scriptural integrity. These Old Testament writers were discussing the Messiah. And then the historical provenance, that there was a historical movement in the first century of people expecting the Messiah. So, Pat, you covered all that. I just wanted to give our listeners a great acronym to remember when you're talking with people, something hopefully we'll do there. Well, Pat, we have, as I told you, with Dr. Holden out today, we have a few minutes here at the end where I just wanted you to talk a little bit about your ministry. You know, we mentioned at the top of the broadcast about, you know, he's the co-founder and president of Evidence and Answers. Can you just tell our listeners a little bit about what Evidence and Answers is and how to connect with you via that ministry?
Yeah, thanks a lot, Brian. Yeah, Evidence and Answers, we're based here in Hawaii, and we do exactly what our name says, provide compelling evidence for Christ and biblical answers to the issues of today. So we provide the compelling evidence for Christ, but also we address the issues of today, showing how the Christian worldview provides the best answers to the issues we're facing today, whether it be about technology, medical ethics, government, Islam, Buddhism. We address many of those issues and Evidence and Answers. We have a teaching ministry throughout the world. We team up with great ministries and schools all around the world, like what you have, Brian, there, and Veritas, and train and equip leaders around the world in apologetics and the Christian worldview. We also have our own radio show, which we'll be also broadcasting these shows on, our radio show, Evidence and Answers. We've got our website, evidenceandanswers.org, great resource there, over 1,000 podcasts. We're on Spotify, we got YouTube videos, tremendous resource there, evidenceandanswers.org. But our ministry extends here in the Pacific and throughout Asia and ultimately around the world. But we are products of great teachers, as you mentioned, you know, Dr. Geisler and Ron Rhodes and many of those that come on your show had a great part in training many of us so that we could extend the ministry here in Hawaii and throughout the Pacific.
Yeah, and I just love, again, I just absolutely love that you are training up leaders, apologetics in Asian countries, and how important that is. And, you know, just to give perspective for particularly here of our American listeners, we think of Asia as something being over there. That's something, you know, across the Pacific. But remind yourself that before the European influence in the United States or in North America, Asia extended from Asia throughout the Americas. The Native Americans are of Asian ancestry. You could even trace their DNA back to Mongolia, northern China, and other such places. So Asia, in a historical stepping back and looking at the big picture, isn't just something in the East. It really encompassed the entirety of what we would know the Americas. So the Asian culture is a predominant culture in the world, including here in America with our Native American population. And then we love our Native American brother and sisters. But Asia is so important and such a huge part of the world population. I love the fact, Pat, that you're out there and you are specifically not just in Hawaii, but you really do reach and specialize and do amazing things within Asian cultures. You know, you mentioned, you know, particularly South Korea. I mean, the largest churches in America. It reminds me, I think I've said this on this broadcast before, but it's worth stating again. I was visiting a friend. He lives in Las Vegas, Nevada. And he said, "Hey, let's just walk down." It wasn't the strip. It was some other side thing. And I remember walking down, and there was a lot of hustle and bustle and lights and all this type of stuff. But standing there in the middle of it was an Asian man with a sign that says, you know, how can I pray for you? And I walked up to him, and I forgot exactly how the conversation went, but this is the gist of it. I said, you know, what are you doing here? Why are you here? And he said something along the lines of, I'm just here as a missionary from South Korea, and the Americans were gracious enough to bring us the gospel. I'm trying to bring it back to you as a reminder of where you once were. And I was like, wow. It was profound. And he just smiled, and you know, he wasn't in people's face, he wasn't barking, he just held up a sign, you know, if you need prayer. And I just thought that was a beautiful sentiment. He's coming back as a Korean gentleman to bring the gospel to, really, you know, let's just say it, Las Vegas can be a really a tough place at times. So I love the fact that you're doing, so it's not just the Philippines and Hawaii, of course. What are some of the other countries and areas that you've been to, Pat, in the Asia Pacific Rim?
Yeah, you know, I can't mention some of them,
right?
Because they're closed countries, but countries in Asia, Southeast Asia. Another country we do a tour in, a Christian history tour, is Japan. Mm-hmm. A lot of people don't know. Japan has a tremendous Christian history, older than the U.S.
That's right.
Christian history. And there was a time when the gospel flourished in Japan. The missionaries that followed Xavier said Japan will be the gateway to all of Asia. Well, you know, they were the Christians were persecuted for almost 250 years and nearly wiped Christianity out of Japan. And Japan now is less than 1% Christian, an unreached mission field. But we spend a lot of time there. We were there in Myanmar before it closed, Nepal. And I can tell you, it's, you know, one of the exciting things in Asia is that a lot of the Christians out there are first generation Christians. Mm. And so a lot of things that you saw the Christians suffering in the book of Acts is what they're going through.
Right.
A lot of these pagan temples, big money, big money. And when you go in there and say, hey, this is not the true God, let me tell you about the true God. Oh boy, they face a lot of persecution from the Hindus and others out there, Buddhists, because boy, you're really ruining the economy of a particular village or city there when you're turning people away from the worship of Krishna or Vishnu or whoever, Buddha, to the true God. And so a lot of the persecution and things that the Christians face in Acts, they're facing there in Asia. And you know, Brian, you know, one of the humbling things is that as an American, I always thought, we're going to finish bringing the Great Commission, bringing the gospel to the whole world. We're going to finish the job. But when you get there to America and you see the excitement and passion of these Asian Christians, and they don't have the resources we have, but when you talk to them and they say, we're going to Iraq, we're going to Afghanistan, and I look at them and say, how are you going to get there? And they said, God will provide. We'll just go. And if the doors are closed, we'll go somewhere else. And it's really humbling. You realize, you know what? These guys are going to finish the job. Mm. They're going to bring the gospel throughout the entire world. It's really humbling to be out there and seeing all that.
Yeah, I just love it. You know, so many Americans don't realize the Japanese Christian influence. For me personally, I loved a gentleman of years ago. His name was Toyohiko Kagawa. And he was a poet. He was a pastor. He's a Methodist pastor. He just spoke beautifully and profoundly. If you've never picked up his books, I would recommend. And another one is Atsuyoshi Fujiwara. And some would just call him Yoshi Fujiwara. And he was another brilliant. He grew up Buddhist and he was converted and they wrote just amazing, amazing things. So good. And thanks for that update, Pat. And we would encourage our listeners to check out Evidence and Answers, to check out more of your ministry, and really just support you. Join us next week as we look at Jesus' use of apologetics for the existence of God. Until then, may the Lord richly bless you.
Our time today has come to a close. Be sure to join us again here on Evidence and Answers. Our goal is to bring you the love of Christ and to equip you in your faith to always be ready to give a response. If you would like to hold an apologetics conference or series of teachings at your facility, contact Pat by calling him in Hawaii. That number there is 483-0586. Or email him through the Evidence and Answers website. That's evidenceandanswers.org. Be sure to browse through our listing of topics on our site. We have everything from atheism to Zen Buddhism. You will also find articles and additional audio for you to listen to or download. An additional location to find Pat's messages is on YouTube. Look up Evidence and Answers and hit that subscribe button. To keep quality broadcasts like Pat's on the air, we rely on generous financial support from you, our listeners. Donating is simple. Once again, log on at evidenceandanswers.org. Evidence and Answers is grateful for one of our sponsors, the Honolulu Christian Church. If you don't have a home church and are looking for a great place to grow in your faith, check out the Honolulu Christian Church. For service times, log in at honoluluchristian.org. Join us again next time on the air or online as we provide compelling reasons for faith in Christ. That's Evidence and Answers with Pat Zukeran.